I really liked last week's episode of this show. There was a lot of predictions, a lot of kind of controversial stuff. It got pretty decent number of clicks, but only had one comment. So I figured the best way to remedy that would be to get myself off of the show as much as possible.
Yeah, Josh, I feel like you need to come up with at least one more alternate account so you can give yourself more than one comment.
Well, listen.
We all know that was you.
I'm going to talk about who it was actually later, because he's been around on several shows, and I really appreciate that. So this is Roughly the Kicker on Arrowhead Addict Radio. I'm Joshua Briscoe.
I'm Sam Shavern.
Sam was on a few weeks ago, maybe even a couple of months ago, and at this point I'm just desperate to find someone else to talk. So on this episode, we're going to talk about Evan Mathis, the recent news that's come from that, and then also the salary cap and how that affects the Chiefs and what that had to do with Mathis, and even all the way to Justin Houston. The Chiefs released a receiver that everybody had some high hopes for. We're going to talk about him, Travis Kelce. The year of Travis Kelce is upon us. He's getting some national headlines and some interesting analysis there. We're going to talk about all those. Then we're going to talk about what we can learn from these OTAs and minicamps that the Chiefs just wrapped up. Look at a couple articles, even just from here on Arrowhead Addict. I'm going to make Sam read some stuff. We're going to blast through some tweets. We're going to talk about some all-you-killed-in-OTA teams that Terrezz Paylor put together. And overall, I just think this is going to be better because I'm going to talk a little bit less.
All righty. Now it's time to dive in, and we're going to take a look at my personal favorite subject to look at on the weekends, the salary cap, and then Evan Mathis, who I'm going to pretend I've heard of before.
Perfect. You heard about him when I talked about him last week, so that's honestly good enough. All right, so June 17th, a quick little two-day timeline here. Matt Connor, at Matt Connor SBN, has been on the show, said, John Clayton says Chiefs are among four teams in on Evan Mathis. The Pro Bowl guard from the Eagles, I add parenthetically, who was released because he wanted a bigger contract. And we know about the Chiefs guard situation. He continues, simultaneously makes perfect sense, Andy Reid, and no sense, money, other free agency moves. So then on June 18th, Andy Reid said, we're not looking at Evan Mathis, quote, at all. Sam, your thoughts, just kidding. No, it's not that I don't believe Andy Reid when he says they're not interested in Evan Mathis. But if they were looking to sign Evan Mathis, Reid wouldn't tell us until they had ink on the paper. So for the sake of this segment here, either let this help you understand why Reid and Dorsey may have made that choice, or ignore what Andy Reid said, which is not a bad idea, and take this in without any preconceptions, without any other idea of where Mathis might land, because right now we really don't know. Through this segment, all of the salary cap numbers are going to be from overthecap.com. Sam, this is going to be a lot of me talking, I'm afraid.
But I'm used to that.
You're going to be back in a second. Unless you have if you have something to add about Evan Mathis or a question, I want you to fire that right into this here microphone.
I would just say overthecap.com is an acronym for OCD. That's all I caught from that.
Well, it's OC, OTC, DC.
I'm not including whatever.
The Broncos are reportedly now not a major player for Evan Mathis, which is something that sort of caused some concern when he was first released, because he makes a lot of sense for what the Broncos need, and the Broncos have cap money this year. However, if you look at how their cap plays out over next season, it makes a lot more sense. They have the cap money this year, but next year it gets kind of tricky. And also, like the Chiefs, they have a franchise player that they've got to get an extension for, Demaryius Thomas. Now, the Chiefs currently have the least amount of salary cap space in the entire NFL, just over $1 million. That's not going to get Evan Mathis knocked down. But next year, they're projected to have the fourth most space, or they currently do. Obviously, that's without some really big contracts. No Justin Houston, Sean Smith, Dontari Poe. But that's about $48 million there. That sort of cap flexibility next year comes with the advantages of building this young cheap team that we've talked about so many times here, making the secondary so young and cheap. Even though you're getting Ron Parker now at a higher rate, still the age and the price tag, like these rookies, Steven Nelson, Marcus Peters coming in. That's the advantage. Now you have some cap flexibility. I also think this is another reason the Chiefs are going to let Sean Smith walk. Keep that young secondary, keep it cheap. And you can go out and get guys like Houston, Macklin, Grubbs, pay them all. Dontari Poe, get him an extension. So keep that in mind when you're looking at Evan Mathis. So now I'm going to jump over to the one comment, Sam, that came from last week's episode. That wasn't me.
Are you sure?
I'm 100%. Right. Although he and I agree very often, and he says nice things about the show usually, so maybe it's me and I'm like sleepwalking.
True or false, has he ever commented on your hair?
I don't think so, but this is a voice podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
So no. Okay. So maybe it's not me then. So the ever-present Cal Chiefs fan, one of the smartest commenters on Arrowhead Addict, possibly because it's actually me, he accurately pointed out that the Chiefs fans underestimated the cap magic that Dorsey and the Chiefs were able to put together to bring in Jeremy Maclin, to be able to tag Justin Houston, to not have to restructure Alex Smith's deal within all of that. But I still don't see the Chiefs ending up with Evan Mathis, if they're interested or not, frankly. And here's why. Current reports have Mathis looking for north of $6 or $7 million per year in a multi-year deal. He was about, I think he was to make 5.5 with the Eagles, and wanted a new deal. So the Eagles just cut bait and let him walk. So with a total cap number of, let's put it at $6.5 million, that would make Evan Mathis the fourth highest paid player on the Chiefs. Ben Grubbs is a $2.4 million cap hit this year, and then it jumps to $6.3 million next year, and over $7 million in 2017. The Chiefs would have to do basically a more dramatic version of that for Mathis, where this year it would be a big signing bonus. His actual cap money would be like the veteran minimum, and then the next couple of years would really shoot up. And that's something that I don't like to see money put in really down the road. We saw it with Dwayne Bowe. Now the Chiefs have like $8 million in dead money with Dwayne Bowe this year. So to do a more dramatic version of that, the Chiefs would end up wrapping up about $13 million into their starting guards in 2016, and then also potentially in 2017 as well. So if they somehow do that, which again, I'll say, Evan Mathis and Ben Grubbs aside on either side of either a rookie or an inexperienced center, Eric Kusher, Mitch Morse, would be great for this offensive line, especially the jump from last year. It would take I think Matt Verderam, the editor here at Arrowhead Addict, said it would take the Chiefs' offensive line from a huge question mark to a strength, and I agree with that. But to make this happen with Evan Mathis would come at a huge cost, possibly a cost of a high-end player, possibly a cost of a long-term contract with Justin Houston. Maybe you lose Dontari Poe and you have to deal with him next year. Certainly you're losing Sean Smith, because I think they're doing that anyway. I would love to see Evan Mathis show up, as much as I love Zach Fulton. I'd love to see Mathis come up, but I don't think it's going to happen. Also, this last point, and then Sam, your time is coming, I promise. The Chiefs have Jeff Allen, Zach Fulton, and Paul Faniaka for a combined $3.4 million cap hit this season. So if you've ever listened to this show ever before, you know how I feel about Zach Fulton. I think he started 16 games last year. If he was on the bench this whole time, people would be looking at him as a high-ceiling prospect. He just never got on the field. But he played and started every game and played well. I think he has a high ceiling, and he's already shown that he's competent as a sixth-round pick with no experience. Then they bring in Faniaka as some veteran experience. Jeff Allen is coming back from injury. He could end up at right tackle, but if nothing else, he'll probably end up at right guard. There's depth, and again, inexpensive depth there. To bring in Mathis, one of those guys would have to go, and to cut Faniaka is immediate dead money on a guy they just signed. To cut Jeff Allen is going to be something that would be a little bit controversial, although he doesn't bring a ton to the table. He also has enough of a cap number to be wary of. And to cut Zach Fulton would send me into a downward spiral of emotions, just like this downward spiral of me talking. I almost punctuated that appropriately, and then I stuttered. You're here to stutter for me, Sam. I don't need to do this on my own anymore.
All right, now let's go to a piece of news. The Chiefs recently just released wide receiver Derrick Rogers.
Derrick. Nice job with Derrick. I've never heard anyone else named Derrick. Okay, so we've talked about Derrick Rogers here a bunch. I know Reggie, if you're listening right now, I know you love Derrick Rogers. I wanted to love him too, but I was always a skeptic, and it essentially panned out. This is a bummer, but it's not surprising. I never expected him to be a factor in real games, but I hope he would at least show up for the preseason, have a chance to actually flash his speed and raw talent out on the field at all. This is sort of how I felt about Terrell Pryor, who, by the way, ended up just being cut by the Bengals this week and is now apparently going to try to play receiver, which teams have wanted him to do for a long time now. But after he sort of failed with the Chiefs and then with the Bengals, now I guess he's making that move. I digress. I didn't expect Pryor or Rodgers to actually be on the roster, but I thought they would both get to the preseason for a chance to fight for a spot, or at least, like I said, you know, show a little bit of a flash, because both of those guys had that raw talent and real explosiveness, but it just didn't happen.
Yeah, before he was released, BJ Kessel, or at Chiefs Reporter,
Kessel, but it was a nice try.
Yeah, tweeted, best catch I saw today was wide receiver Derrick Rogers with one-handed grab up the seam in teamwork. Definitely a head-turning moment.
And Rogers has that kind of ability, and we all know that. He also has the kind of ability that makes you turn your head and look away from him off the field. But That speed, that talent, that one-handed grab sort of explosiveness is something that we didn't see at all from receivers last year. Now, obviously, with Jeremy Maclin, we never expected Rodgers to take that Jeremy Maclin spot, or have that sort of that explosiveness you could count on. But to have him just sort of fade away like that is disappointing, although there might be some reasons behind it.
Yeah, Adam Teicher.
Teicher, but nice try.
Adam Teicher.
BJ Teicher.
Wrote that Rodgers hasn't shown much in off-season practice, but he thought that the Chiefs could give him a longer look.
Yeah, that's essentially how I felt also. It doesn't surprise me that he's gone, but I expected him to stick around a little bit longer.
Yeah, another interesting observation came from a tweet from
Mr. T-Shirt.
The play of rookie Chris Conley might have had something to do with Rodgers' release.
Now, this is the most optimistic. This is the most optimistic reason for Rodgers not even getting a look into actually training camp. It also would strike me as a little bit silly because if you're investing this much in Chris Conley's performance in minicamp, in OTAs, when they're in shorts and shells and running around, I guess if you see something there that's so explosive that you feel so good about that you don't need the depth that Rodgers could provide, that's great. I would be a little bit wary of that, and in fact, I'm a little bit doubtful that this is the case. Also, if they saw Chris Conley doing this in college and then they saw him still being fast in shorts in pro camps, I don't think that changed their outlook of the team, how they're building the team, what they were expecting from Chris Conley. If anything changes with Conley, I think it'll be because he steps up in training camp in the preseason in the first few weeks, and then maybe in week four, we see them make a weird move with receiver, and we go, oh, well, they're no longer playing Jason Avant as much because Chris Conley has taken a huge step up. That I could see, that would make a little bit more sense. But to say that Rodgers was released in June because Conley has been so explosive is questionable to me, although I hope that's the case, because the more explosive Conley looks, the better for everybody. Now over to a headline that scared me at first and then ended with some good stuff. Chiefs' Travis Kelce isn't shy about demanding the ball by Kevin Patra over on NFL.com. Sam, this is your moment.
The Kansas City Chiefs' wide receiver core has been the focal point of off-season discussions due to their lack of production last year and perceived question marks in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
With every chat, however, should come a caveat.
Mm-hmm.
The most dynamic pass catcher on the Chiefs doesn't play wide receiver. He plays tight end.
That's right!
Travis Kelce, a.k.a. Zeus, led the Chiefs...
Is he the god?
led the Chiefs last seasons with 67 catches for 862 yards.
Yeah, that's right.
In 2015...
That's the year.
He wants the ball even more, and he's making it known on the practice field.
Oh, yeah, Travis Kelce knows what he wants.
Quarterback Alex Smith said, per ESPN.com, quote, "You're doing things at the line of scrimmage, changing plays with him depending on how they're playing him leverage-wise," end quote.
That's smooth as hell.
He wants a different route so we can get the football. Yesterday in practice, I can hear him make calls at the line of scrimmage because he wants the football. And that's the end of that. As far as I know about Travis Kelce,
he's
in 2014, he played really well, and he didn't get all that many snaps. I mean, he got, 600 snaps, usually?
Dropping the knowledge! Sam, my face is melting!
It's about 1,000, generally, if you're going on average, but he only got about 600, and he was very consistent.
I don't know how many snaps Travis Kelce had last year, although definitely at least through the first half of the season, he certainly didn't get enough of them. Anthony Fasano, who's no longer on the team, got a bunch of snaps that I wasn't a huge fan of. Fasano was fine. He was a good number two tight end, but Kelce now stepping up this year is really good. Now, when I first read this headline and saw Travis Kelce isn't shy about demanding the ball, I went, oh, hello, Terrell Owens. This is going to be a bad time for all of us. But then you read what Alex Smith says, and it's stuff where Travis Kelce is reading the defense, reading the coverage, and then is letting Smith know how he can run a route to better beat this coverage, where he'll be open more. Getting the ball in Travis Kelce's hands is always a good thing, unless he continues with his fumbling problems. But if he can get the fumbling thing under control, you want the ball in Travis Kelce's hands as much as possible. He's as much of a prototype tight end as there is in the NFL. He's a goal line threat. He's an end zone threat. He's a down the field threat. And he'll bring in everything over the middle. I love Travis Kelce. I love him on this offense. And the fact that he's reading defenses in a way where he can be lined up on somebody, then look over to Alex Smith, give him a call, they can switch up the play, they can audible just his route, and then in a way where they both expect him to be open more often, that is all fantastic news. Welcome to the year of Travis Kelce.
And speaking of the year of Travis Kelce, the more he plays this year, if he plays more consistently than he did last year, then his curve is only going up. I mean, he's going to learn.
He's
going
to have an up curve.
Yeah,
Travis Kelce's going to have an up curve. I love Travis Kelce. Now let's look over to OTAs and minicamps. So here in Arrowhead Addict, Matt Verderam put together three things we learned in 3 days of the minicamps, and they're all worth looking into. So Sam, I want you to read one of the points at a time. You're going to read it, and then I'm going to come in with some hot take, and we're going to move on to the next one.
All right.
You with me so far?
Yeah, I'm with you, depending on what hot take is. He writes...
It's going to be spicy.
One, the offensive line is going to be a great battle. Good there.
Yeah, you keep reading.
All right, the left side seems to be settled with Eric Fisher holding down the tackle spot with Ben Grubbs entrenched at guard. After that, all three positions are completely up for grabs. Center might be
up
for Grubbs.
Go ahead.
It's funny because his name's Grubbs.
Right, thanks.
After that...
That's the thing from Fantastic Four. I believe.
Ben...
It's very close to Ben Grubbs.
His name's Ben Grimm? Ben Grimm?
I think that's right.
Okay.
Let's go with Ben Grimm.
Center might be the most exciting battle of all, with rookie Mitch Morse and third-year man Eric Cush getting after it.
Cush. 420 Cush Blunts. Eric is Cush.
Eric Cush getting after it.
Eric
so smooth. Morse seems to be the favorite in many eyes, but Cush presumably knows the offense. Cush is also the favorite in many other people's eyes. Additionally, right guard is a three-headed monster between Zach Fulton, who started all 16 games there last year, free agent addition Paul Fanaka.
I'm still not sure, if we're being honest.
I'm going to go with Fanaka.
Okay.
And returning...
Paul Fanny is how I
Paul Fanny. Addition Paul Fanny and returning veteran Jeff Allen. Right tackle will also see Allen getting some snaps, with Donald Stevenson considered the favorite.
Nice job there. Now, for the record, Matt didn't write anything about the Fantastic Four. That was ad-libbed. Most of the stuff that sounded like reading was actually reading. The offensive line is going to be a huge battle. We know about Eric Fisher. I've talked about Eric Fisher's development time and time again, where that Tyron Smith comparison, where I think this is Fisher's big step-up year, and if it's not, he, and then by association, the Chiefs, are in trouble. Left guard has been Grubbs. We're all comfortable with that. He's the thing. He's made of stone. He's gonna have a good time.
Exposed to radiation, cosmic radiation, actually.
And that's why he's a Pro Bowler. So in the middle, as Matt mentioned, we've talked about Mitch Morse, the second round draft pick of the Chiefs this year, and he's extremely versatile. He's gotten play, I believe, at right guard in mini camps, and the right guard position we know is a mess with all these names. But either Morse or Cush will end up in the middle. And if Morse starts, there's a school of thought that Cush won't actually make the roster at all, even though he's a very good offensive lineman, we think. But he's pretty much a center only, whereas Morse is very versatile. Then at the right guard spot, you look at all those guys. I love Zach Fulton. I talk about it every show. I want to see him get that spot if he earns it at all in training camp. I think the tie should go to the younger, cheaper option. In this case, it's Zach Fulton. Also, the younger, cheaper option with the experience on last year's team, also Zach Fulton. Whenever he played beside Rodney Hudson last year, but with nothing on his right side with Ryan Harris, you know, he held his own on the better side of the offensive line, admittedly. But he held his own there at right guard. It's going to be a complete free-for-all, especially because we don't even know what's going to happen at right tackle. At right tackle, it's basically not right tackle Jeff Allen, career right guard for the Chiefs, Jeff Allen, versus right tackle Donald Stevenson, who could not get on the field last year amidst one of the worst offensive lines I've ever seen in the history of the NFL. So for me, the right tackle spot is what I'm the most nervous about. Everywhere else, I feel like there is a player who will or could at least step up. But the right tackle spot is the one I'm looking at extra tough, although the right guard spot is the one where I'm having my fingers most crossed for Zach Fulton.
Number two, Travis Kelce is primed for a huge year.
Yeah, we just talked to you about that. That one's, I didn't make you read that whole paragraph. Is that better?
We didn't
have to like, confuse Travis Kelce with another superhero, because we know he's a god, because Zeus, because his nickname is now Zeus.
Yeah, reading is hard.
Catching lightning and throwing footballs. I mean, catching footballs and throwing lightning.
You tried. You really did.
I mean,
number three.
Look in the mythology of Zeus and tell me what doesn't match up with Travis Kelce. Hopefully most of it.
He didn't crawl out of his father's stomach by, like stabbing him.
In fairness, we don't know that.
That's actually true.
By the way, happy Father's Day. Recording this on Father's Day. Happy Father's Day.
Yeah. Special Father's Day edition. Turns out that
the father of Zeus,
Travis Kelce, stabbed his way out of his father's stomach, replaced by a stone.
This has definitely at least been the weirdest show since Ryan stopped caring.
Ouch.
This might be the weirdest show that's ever happened.
Number three, Derrick Johnson, Tom Bahali, are healthy.
Hey, listen. I know you have the Derrick thing stuck in your mind, but that's just normal Derrick. Okay, that's Derrick Johnson. We've talked about Derrick Johnson a whole lot of times, so there's no more Derricks. We're done talking about Derrick.
Okay, number three, Derrick Johnson, Tom Bahali are healthy.
I think it's pronounced Tom Bahali.
Actually,
Derrick Johnson.
If like Tom Bahali and Breen from Half-Life became like a thing, it'd be Tom Babareen.
So now everyone's lost.
Yeah, including myself. Last year, Johnson only played the first half of week one before tearing his Achilles, which must suck. With Johnson now back from the starting lineup, the inside linebacker... back in the starting lineup, thank you. The inside linebacker will help to stuff the leaky run defense. Johnson is a truly great player, and having him back is a big deal. Hali, or Tamba, or Tamba Hali... or Derek Hali, was able to play every game last year, but dealt with constant knee problems. After getting minor surgery in the offseason to clean out the gunk in his knee, Hali should be back to his old form. Having a duo of Hali and Houston, or Robin and Batman, on the edges is devastating for any offense.
Not a duo of, Aphrodite and Venus. I don't know, I couldn't think of any more great gods. This is something we've all been very aware of. Now, the Chiefs also brought in those two inside linebackers through the draft, and Josh Malgo just got a pretty nice contract, so we can expect a much better dealing with that leaky run defense. I like the word leaky in the case of run defense. That's going to be dried up as it is with Derek Johnson being back and healthy, which is a great takeaway to have. And then Tamba, I hadn't even really considered the knee injury that he had been playing through last year. This hadn't really come to mind. So then hearing that he had that minor procedure to clean out that gunk and then now can come back with that extra spring in his step, pairing him up with Justin Houston is going to be a big deal. Now, if I could add one more thing based on that final point, Matt mentions the devastating duo of Tamba and Justin Houston, but Houston's still not at camp. This happened last season. He had one of the best seasons in pass rushing history, so I'm not horrified here. But if he doesn't show up to training camp, and then we even start looking at him potentially missing games without this contract, I'm going to start biting my nails a little bit. Another player that's gotten a little bit of hype these last couple of days, mild hype, but a little bit, is Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, now known as LDT, because I have a real hard time with names.
Herbie Tiopi, another difficult name, yeah, published an article about LDT's positive strides in his second year as he got first team reps at right guard in Wednesday's OTAs.
Yes, in the discussion about right guard that we just had, LDT did not come up, and that's for a reason. There's a lot of options at right guard, and I'm not sure that he belongs in that conversation. Now, if he plays his way into it, now I would rather play his way into a right tackle spot, but if he plays his way into being useful on this team, that's great, and I'm happy for it. I think there's a logjam at right guard right now. And also, again, back to my Zach Fulton point that I make every week now, I think, LDT has these physical traits and assets that we think so highly of, and we go, oh, he's a prospect, hey, he's getting some playing time, look at this is really exciting, maybe there's something that we haven't seen yet. Where with Zach Fulton, if he didn't play, we'd be saying the same stuff, but since he actually got on the field, we don't think as highly as what he's actually bringing to the table here. I think we're overlooking the potential of Zach Fulton because we've actually seen him in the game. He's a little bit of a known commodity, although I think he still has a much higher ceiling than we've seen so far. With LDT, it's all still hope. Now I'm going to bust into this new sub-segment for the first time ever in the history of Ref and the Kicker. Working title, Sam reads tweets and I react to them in a succinct manner.
I think the hardest part of this is not going to be me reading the tweets, it's you being succinct.
Yeah, succinct, especially for a couple of the later ones, succinct is going to not be true.
All right, at Adam Teicher, hashtag Chiefs first minicamp practice is done. They wasted no time in getting Marcus Peters involved. He was in the first team nickel defense.
So Marcus Peters, obviously the first round pick for the Chiefs this year. I've talked about it. There's a chance, you know, that the rookies don't have a huge impact, both of the rookie corners don't get to outplay Phillip Gaines and Sean Smith early on, even though Sean Smith might be suspended for the first couple of games. But to have Peters put in the nickel defense right away, it's a good way to get him started. Although, you know, we expect him to eventually be the every down outside guy across from Sean Smith, or maybe eventually across from Phillip Gaines.
At Adam Teicher again, hashtag Chiefs.
You can stop saying hashtag starting now. I didn't give you that ahead of time, sorry. You don't have to say hashtag anymore.
Okay, #Chiefs also had Mitch Morse in starting lineup for the first time. He was the right guard.
Everybody's playing right guard right now. Even with what we were just talking about, we're talking about Mitch Morse and Eric Cush in the middle. Now Morse is also a right guard candidate. I don't know why people don't see the Zach Fulton light. I'm looking into it. Now I see the light. What's the rest of the Tangled lyric?
At last I see light.
Let Zach Fulton fight for this.
Okay. At Therese Paler, the starting OL group was Fisher, Grubbs, Cush, Morse, and Allen.
It's still Cush.
I love that.
It's still Cush. Fisher, Grubbs are locked in. It's going to be Cush and Morse in the middle. The right side, flip all of the coins and then just pray that it lands face up on one of them.
Paler again, the number sign Chiefs. All you killed it in OTAs team looks something like this. Connolly, Kelsey, DAT, Cook, Mack, Wilson, Sean Smith, and Gaines.
All right, so quick thing on every one of those guys, because I think these are all good things, obviously. Guys who played well in OTAs. Chris Connolly being explosive, catching everything, getting under balls. It's what you want to see from a rookie wide receiver who you're expecting big explosive things from, even though he's going to be coming into a really tough system to get a quick grasp on. Travis Kelce, Sam, remind me, have we talked about Travis Kelce yet on this episode?
We should probably cover it again.
Let's cover it again. I really like Travis Kelce. I think he's good. DAT, D'Anthony Thomas, explosive. He's playing more receiver now. If he's getting that run at receiver and looking good doing it, especially in his route running, that's a case where I think you actually can take stuff away from the OTAs, because sharp route running should translate to every stage of the game. Now, Cook is the unfamiliar name. He's a former Gardner Webb wide receiver, Kenny Cook. He's a rookie. He defeated Hodgkin's lymphoma during what would have been his sophomore season in college. BJ Kissel has that story on KZChiefs.com. That's the same kind of cancer that Eric Berry is currently fighting. So to have an undrafted, a priority undrafted free agent rookie really making plays in OTAs puts a guy like Junior Hemingway's job on the line. If this is a guy who can really play special teams, we might actually get to see another Albert Wilson this year, an undrafted guy who really comes onto the scene and has some explosive plays. Next, Jeremy Maclin. We expect him to look good. If he doesn't look good throughout the season, we're in trouble. Albert Wilson, same deal. Undrafted free agent last year, one full year in the system. I'm expecting big things from him. Not necessarily that he even should live up to them because of where he came into the league as an undrafted free agent rookie, but I'm expecting them because we've seen him make strides. Sean Smith and Philip Gaines, we've heard great stuff about them. I think I talked about them mostly 2 weeks ago on the show. Really dove into the corners, so if you want to hear more, hop back there.
Alrighty. At SiriusXMNFL, Mills top 10 Ds for 2015.
This is a power ranking for defenses.
All right, number 1, Seahawks, 2, Jets, Bills, Ravens, Broncos, Chiefs, Texans, Lions, Rams, and Packers.
So the two there, obviously, from the AFC West, Broncos at 5 and Chiefs at 6. Last week on the show, I did the 90-50-10 game saying things have a 90%, 50%, and 10% chance of happening in this Chiefs season. I believe I ended up going to the defenses on some level there. I think I said there's a 50% chance the Chiefs have a top 10 defense, just because defenses are so hard to predict in the NFL. There's so many factors. We saw last year a couple of injuries made the run defense horrible, but the pass defense looked great. This year they've really bolstered up the middle of that defense, especially the linebackers, to get that leaky run defense. Secondary looks better. This defense is going to be very good. In fact, I think there's a very good chance the Chiefs not only have the best defense in the division, but have a top 5 defense.
At PFF_Matt, Jamal Charles was tied for lowest percent of carries that went for no gain or loss at 12.2%. Kyle Davis?
It's Nile. It's just like the river. Yeah. Just like the river. Get back to ancient Greece, but now Rome, because it's the Nile.
Kyle Davis, there we go, was the second highest at 25.4%.
So, obviously, we can all hear that Jamal Charles is very good. And let me break that down. The lowest percent of carries that went for no gain. So, 12% of Jamal Charles' carries, he hit the line and went nowhere. Now, that 12% seems kind of high to me at first glance, but being tied for best in the NFL, apparently that happens way more than we thought, especially when you look at what Kyle Davis did. A quarter of Kyle Davis' carries went for nothing. I don't know if this also includes less than zero. I'm assuming it does. So we can say a quarter of Kyle Davis' carries were in the zeros or in the negatives of yards gained. I'm happy if Kyle Davis wants to say there's not a real talent gap between him and Jamal Charles, but there's a talent gap, and more than anything, though, there's a football IQ gap, the ability to read those gaps, like we talked about last week, where you can see what's actually developing and then take what the defense is giving you instead of just running straight into the back of your offensive lineman because that's where the play originally told you to go. That's how you end up with no yards on a carry. You're supposed to go between the guard and the tackle. There's no hole there. You just run in there. You get stuffed. You get knocked back. This stat is how that happens, and that's exactly what I was talking about last week with Kyle Davis. This is a problem. There is a huge gap between him and Jamal Charles. Right now, he's not the successor to Jamal Charles until that problem goes away.
Saying he has to take advantage of the opponent's leaky defense?
I think, especially because he is the Nile River, there should be a flood. There should be a flood going up the middle of the offensive line because, you know, now the Chiefs are going to have a Kush in the middle. And that makes everybody happy. That's going to do it for this episode of Roughing the Kicker on Arrowhead Addict Radio, arrowheadaddict.com. We pretty much covered all the bases.
I really wanted to hit on this.
Okay.
We haven't touched on Travis Kelce at all. I really wanted to talk
Zeus,
about
Zeus, the god Zeus.
Yes, the god Zeus. We haven't talked about Zeus.
Well, look, I think he's going to have a nice season this year, Travis Kelce.
Shut up.
He's got some really
good... Shut up.
And Dance copyrighted. No.
Dang it.
Arrowhead Addict Radio, arrowheadaddict.com. This has been Roughing the Kicker. I am your host, Josh Briscoe.
I am not your host. Thank the good Lord. Sam Shavrin.
Sam, thanks for joining me on this again a second time. You know, maybe we'll have you back. Hope you pass the audition.
You're sort of welcome-ish.
Look, I appreciate whatever I can get. Because, again, last week, I got one comment. This week, hopefully it goes better. Even if I have two comments, just go, I hate the new guy.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to at least have a couple comments saying, that guy sucks.
I'll have something. As always, thank you for listening so much to this show. And we said our names already. It's coming up after Father's Day, so let's switch it up a little bit.
Bye, Dad!
Bye, Dad! Woo! You read my mind. That wasn't even planned.
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the base?